Thanks for stopping by for this edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. I'm Luann Crane here with Ryan Dobson, and our host is psychologist and best-selling author Dr. James Dobson.
Luann, I'd like to get started today by sharing a quote I ran across from one of our founding fathers, John Adams. He wrote in his journal in 1778, "The foundation of national morality must be laid in private families." And that is a sentiment we'd all agree with here at Family Talk.
Amen. That is why we are committed to creating resources that will give your family the best chance to stay strong and close to the Lord. We do believe, as did John Adams, that strong families will give our country the best chance for thriving in the future.
Well, to that end, we began a conversation last time with our favorite pediatrician, Dr. Meg Meeker, who always brings practical advice for moms and dads who are laying a strong emotional, physical, and spiritual foundation for their children.
And we talked very frankly about issues like potty training, discipline, even how to raise that strong-willed child. Classic information that every parent should hear. If you missed part one, be sure to catch up at drjamesdobson.org.
By now, many of our friends will be familiar with Dr. Meeker. She's been a guest on this broadcast many times now. She's been a pediatrician for over 25 years, has written a number of books, including Strong Fathers, Strong Daughters, and The 10 Habits of Happy Mothers.
And Dr. Meeker and her husband Walter in private practice together. They have four children. And as you have already discovered, she has a lot of professional medical expertise to share, as well as a drawing from her own personal experience as a wife and a mom.
Well, we have a lot to cover today, and quite frankly, we're going to tackle a sensitive subject that's probably just for moms and dads. So are the little ones out of the room yet?
We will give you a minute to do that. Now, tackling this very serious subject are your experts, our host, Dr. James Dobson, and his colleague, Dr. Meg Meeker, on this Family Talk broadcast.
Let's take the next question that has been submitted to us not once, but many times. And it may surprise our listeners, but I'm telling you, it's very, very relevant to many parents. And it is little kids and masturbation issues. Even if the little kids don't really realize what they're doing, parents get so upset and concerned about this.
Yeah, because kids do. Kids are so curious about their bodies, and they poke and they look and they prod and they feel. And we want to encourage that because we want them to feel good about their bodies and we want them to feel good about how God made them. And so it's not uncommon at all for kids to masturbate. As a matter of fact, most kids at some point do. And I know certainly as boys get older, it's very common around puberty.
Inevitable.
And I think it's important that we don't shame them because it is part of who they are. I have seen, however, some preschool children use masturbation as a means of self-soothing. I don't know if you ever saw that, but I've had kids who will do it 5, 6, 7, 8 times a day. When they're upset, they turn to masturbation and they don't feel the shame or the embarrassment that maybe their parent would. And so they might do it publicly, or they might do it in the living room, they might do it with other kids around. And it really shakes parents, because it pushes a lot of our buttons, because we are sexualizing it. And these are just little kids sort of self-soothing. And I have actually seen some kids who I don't want to say they're addicted to it, but the behavior is compulsive. It's a compulsive behavior. And I think the most important thing for parents to do, first of all, is to deal with it in a very matter-of-fact way. Don't act excited. Don't act upset. Don't act as though it's a shameful, dirty, awful thing. Because believe it or not, kids have come to me in their teen years really believing that when they did it when they're younger, they were going to irreparably harm themselves. And now maybe they're going to have infertility problems because they picked up from some adult that masturbation was going to hurt them in some way. So I think it's really important that we just are very accurate. Talk about it matter-of-factly. Talk to them about the fact that it is a wonderful feeling and God created their body for that, but it's also a very private thing, and that it's not to be done in public, and that it's not to be used as a way to calm yourself when you feel upset. Now, that's tricky to teach a 4 or 5-year-old, but to try to give them some other option as a other way to self-soothe if we can. But by and large, I think once we get parents to understand it's a normal physiologic function, teach kids it's wonderful and private, they're usually pretty good about it.
It's amazing how many times you and I come down at the same place, Meg, because I have told parents to say to the child, you know, that there are some things that are private you just don't do in front of other people. Mm-hmm. And I've noticed that you have been holding yourself, and it's not a really big deal, but you don't go to the bathroom in the middle of the road. You just don't.
Exactly.
When other people are around. And this is something that you shouldn't do when you're in front of other people, because they may not understand it. But you, like you said, you don't want to shame them. Mm-hmm. You don't want to get all upset over it. And maybe my work and yours too is to assure the parents that there's no significance either physiologically or morally to this behavior, because it's children.
It's children. And psychologically, kids can be riding in their car seat in the back and they start to giggle and it feels good. And it really upsets parents. It doesn't bother the kids at all. So, you know, it really is just trying to encourage parents. It's a very normal part of preschool.
And I don't like the word masturbation for what's going on. That implies an adolescent ejaculation or something. Mm-hmm. That's not what's going on.
No.
It's not the same.
No.
And that's what's happening. And you got a lot of things to worry about in childhood. Yeah, as a mom and dad, you can worry about all kinds of physical problems and, you know, genetic things. There are things to worry about. There are behaviors that you ought to be concerned about. One of them is cruelty to animals. That says something about the child. But this behavior, as far as I'm concerned, it doesn't. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, Dad, you're talking about little kids here. I know that some people are asking because their religion or their denomination is totally against masturbation. And I think some of that is coming through in this question. So how do you address that part of this issue?
Okay, I'm going to give you the first shot.
Okay, well, we'll see how we come down on this.
Here.
I assume, Ryan, you're talking about older kids.
Yeah.
You're talking about
adolescents.
Teens. Adolescents. Yeah. And I get this question all the time because, as you know, I'm a very strong proponent of chastity or abstinence for teenagers because it's so dangerous psychologically and physically for them. And many boys and many teachers will say, well, what do we do? Is it okay for boys to masturbate? And I said, here's the deal. Here's the reality. 100% of boys do, and they have wet dreams, and they're not in control of that. They are, however, in control of their behavior when they're awake and they go through things. Masturbation is not going to physically hurt them. I think, however, compulsive masturbation, particularly with any kind of visual stimulation, pornography, should be highly discouraged. And you need to talk to your son about that because he is going to come across that. So I think that that's a very, very harmful thing. I know, however, that there are some pastors out there who theologically disagree with me and say that masturbation for teen boys should never be. As a pediatrician and a medical person, I cannot go to a boy and say it's bad for you. I can, however, say it's bad for you if you're doing it compulsively and if you're doing it with pornography.
Compulsively?
Yes, repeatedly.
Multiple times a day?
Exactly. Uh-huh. 5, 6, 7 times a day.
Yeah.
Correct.
And with pornography, of course.
Of course. It leads to a very dark place.
Yeah.
Yep.
My concern has to do with the spiritual implications, which I think don't exist. In other words, there are people who, them maybe pastors, maybe others, maybe parents, who are saying to a 14-year-old boy, this will damn you if you do it.
It's a sin.
Exactly.
It's a sin, and it's a mortal sin, and God will not tolerate it, and he will punish you for doing this, and he can't stop.
Right.
I'm telling you, for the majority of boys, they can't stop because it's so quick and so easy, and they're going to do it. And when they do, if once again, after having promised God they'd never do it again, oh, God, I'm so sorry, I've sinned against you again, and then it happens again and again and again and again. And I have actually seen some teenage boys who have said, I can't serve this God.
Mm. Yes.
I can't please him.
Yeah.
Because I can't control this. Yeah. I can't stop. And, you know, what you just said about our commitment to abstinence and to morality and decency mm-hmm. and our opposition to pornography and all that. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. It's true. We agree completely on that. That's really not what I'm talking about here. And I just worry about the boys that get caught in this trap of trying to serve a God they cannot serve.
Exactly.
And we are going to get criticized. Mm-hmm. It happens every time. But I feel an obligation mm-hmm. on behalf of these kids. Mm-hmm. You know, I have spoken to developmental classes in college made up of sophomores, juniors, and seniors and talked to them about this. And I've had them come up to me afterwards with tears in their eyes and say, you don't know what that means to me. Mm. I have been condemned over this in my own mind mm-hmm. and probably to my parents and pastor. And they cannot control it because it's a hormonal thing. The one time or the primary time when I do worry about masturbation is when it continues into marriage. And I think that's what Paul meant when he talked about not defrauding
exactly.
one another.
Mm. Exactly.
That's not giving to your wealth.
Something's amiss.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that can happen. And my other concern is with regard to pornography. Again, a 13-year-old boy is a flame, mm-hmm. typically, with passion. And if he stumbles onto pornography, especially sadistic pornography like Ted Bundy did, he can get addicted to it and it will hold him for a lifetime.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's why it's so important for parents to deal with this sensibly.
Mm-hmm.
And if you know it's going on privately, you've stumbled onto some information about that. Not pornography, but the act itself. Mm-hmm. I think you're better off to pray for him.
Mm-hmm.
And if he wants to talk about it, you talk to him about it. But you don't shame him.
No.
And I have explained in my first film series that my father talked to me about it when I was 13 years old. And it was such a sensitive conversation. It was filled with compassion.
Mm-hmm.
And his message to me is that I hope this does not become a problem for you. But if it does, you should know that I don't think it has much to do with God.
Wow.
And he just put it into perspective for me.
Took all the pressure off you.
He did.
It's wonderful.
And that'll get people angry too. And I can't help it. I feel a need to address this issue and always have.
Dr. Meeker, while we're on this topic of sexuality issues and our children, I know that some parents have questions about gender confusion. You know, we had a neighbor whose little toddler boy would dress up in, you know, fairy costumes and run around and want to play with Barbies. What's your take on that? At what point should you be concerned? Talk about this whole area of gender confusion with our children.
Sure. We're seeing more of it in the news, and we're going to hear about it more in the years ahead. And I have seen for many years little boys in particular. It's more common with boys and girls who will want to dress in their sister's clothes when they're 4, 5, 6, 7 years old. And they want to dress up. They want to run the house around the house in dress. As a matter of fact, I had a neighbor who was 6 years old, and he would run around the neighborhood in his sister's dresses. And we always thought, well, that's a little different. You know, his mother never let him go to school in the dresses. And he grew up and he came to see me. He's 20 years old. He's a big strapping hockey player. And I said, now, I want to just ask you one question, Weston. Would you tell me why you wore your sister's dresses all those years? And he said, well, it's kind of embarrassing, but I'll tell you. He said, I didn't like wearing underwear. So when I wore my sister's dresses, it just felt really good to run around.
Oh, my. So there's a bit of honesty.
Yeah, you know, and here I am as a pediatrician thinking, oh, is he psychologically disturbed? What does he have? And he's just saying, this feels really good,
yeah.
you know, to run around. I think, by and large, that many parents way overreact when their boys are wanting to wear dresses. Boys like to experiment. And I think that that's perfectly fine. I think that when it comes to the place where boys are wanting to wear girls' clothes to school, parents need to draw the line. And that shouldn't be allowed. Any 6, 7, 8, 10, 11-year-old, 12-year-old who is a boy and comes and said, "Mom, I'm really a girl," parents should not be quick to accept that. My belief is that if a boy believes that he is a girl, there's not just gender identity confusion going on. There's something deeper going on. And I think calling it gender identity confusion gives his angst a name. And I think that we tend to do that. And I think that there's something really going wrong. I think that accepting those answers from a child, anybody under 13 and even older, a parent shouldn't do that because a kid just doesn't know. The development of gender, the development of sexuality is a very complicated process, and it really doesn't finish until the kids are closer to 20. So a lot of parents will say, "Well, you know, my 13-year-old girl says she's gay, she's gay." Well, you don't really know that because her sexuality isn't fully developed. But I think that in most situations, Luann, when little boys are dressing up in girls' clothes, 99% of the time, they're just doing it, they're having fun, leave it alone, it'll go away. In the rare instance where a boy does say he's a girl, you need to seek some serious help because there's some real issues going on there. How do you feel?
I feel the same way. What concerns me is that there are private schools now, especially those that are very leftist in orientation, which do not accept masculinity and femininity. They say gender is something that you choose, and you should not take away the child's choice by calling him a boy or calling her a girl, but you should allow them to choose. And in one school I know of, again in California, they actually ban having kids line up by sex, boys and girls, boys and girls. Instead, there is this gender. I think I'm a boy, and I think I'm a girl. And that overrides the natural genetic implications of sexuality. It's so stupid, again. It just messes kids up.
It's very twisted. Yeah. And I will bet that those same people will say diversity is a wonderful thing, but we're not going to allow it in children. They have to be the same. A girl is the same as a boy. The boy is the same as a girl. But we embrace diversity amongst other people. Well, you really can't have it both ways. Clearly, I mean, look at our genes. They're different. You know, we've got X chromosomes and Y chromosomes. And we know all that. And I think that to not embrace the differences between man and woman and girl and boy is really just a profoundly sad disservice to children. Yeah.
If adults want to do that, that's one
thing. Exactly. Not our kids.
You start messing with a child's self-concept and make him think he's she, or her think she's him.
Life is
ridiculous.
Life's hard enough, and it's confusing enough. Why throw a big wrench in it?
Ryan, as long as we're talking about this sensitive subject, before we went on the air, you read something that disturbed me greatly. Something that's occurring in the legislature in the state of California. Explain. I mean, I still can't believe it, but this is what it says.
I know. And it's not just California. You know our friend Brad Dacus.
Yes.
He's the president of the Pacific Justice Institute. He's reporting that a California representative is trying to federalize legislation that would prohibit any efforts to change a minor's sexual orientation, even if the minor requests it. Legislation says that it's dangerous and harmful. And this started out as a gay rights issue, but it's really turned much darker than that. Brad reports that Republicans attempted to add an amendment specifying that pedophilia is not covered as an orientation. Democrats defeated the amendment, stating that all alternative sexual lifestyles should be protected under the law, and accordingly decided that pedophilia is a sexual orientation that should be equally as embraced as homosexuality. And Brad said this language is so broad and vague, it includes all forms of sexual orientation, and that it's not just the orientation that's protected, but the conduct associated with the orientation is protected
now,
as
that's,
well.
Now, that's kind of obscure, but as I understand that bill, and it won't be voted on until October in the California legislature, as it's now written, will say that pedophilia is a protected behavior such as homosexuality. I mean, we're talking here about abusing children sexually. That takes my breath away. And, you know, it's really saying this is just another orientation. I mean, are you kidding me?
Yeah, you know, I think that as child advocates, we have the responsibility. We must continue to protect our children. How bizarre that we would protect a behavior that sexually molests children, and yet at the same time we're trying to fight against child abuse. Well, you can't have that both ways.
You can't have it both ways.
You can't have it both ways, because sexual abuse is just, in many ways, a worse form of child abuse than physical abuse.
And what is the primary response of a grown woman who was abused as a child? Mm. It's always, I feel so dirty.
Yes.
I feel it was my fault.
Yes.
You're talking a six-year-old
child
that's been abused like this, and they carry that guilt with them the rest of their lives.
Mm. Yeah. It's...
It's atrocious.
So
You've gone nuts, I'm telling you. It's an outrage a day is what it is. Well, we've wandered into some pretty tough stuff today.
Yes, we have.
Meg, it's been a pleasure talking to you about them. And I think parents will appreciate frankness and honesty because where are they going to find out?
Yeah.
Where are they going to hear this?
Exactly. And I have so much confidence in parents because they're working harder than ever. And in many ways, they're doing a terrific job. And I just encourage any parent who hears a story that Ryan was just talking about, and it really moves you, and you really want to step up to protect our children, please be a voice for those kids. We need adults to be a voice for those kids and to fight for them continually. Because if we don't speak out for them, who will?
You know, our time's almost gone, and I really feel like I ought to address one last aspect of this matter of child abuse. I've said this before. I will say it as long as I'm on the air and as long as I have breath within my body. The day for the sleepover is over.
Yeah.
You can't trust anybody with your child's sexuality.
Right. Exactly.
Do you agree with that?
Oh, I completely agree. And I think that, you know, many times, and this is becoming more common, particularly during the teen years, with parents who say, I want teenagers to come to my house. I'm going to allow them to drink. I'm going to take their car keys away and lock the doors. Well, that's a recipe for disaster. And then the kids do whatever they want to do all night long. And I think that the other thing with sleepovers, too, is that usually parents fall asleep. So even if you have
a great parent,
he or she is not going to be circling the room. And who knows what kid is going to do what. And parents say, well, my kid is a good kid. He would never do that. It doesn't matter. Even good kids do crazy things. And they do things. We're all sinners and we're all broken people. And that includes our kids. So protect your kids and just keep them home at night. There's really nothing positive comes out of sleepovers. As a matter of fact, it kind of wrecks the next day for the entire family because you have a grouchy kid all day.
My goodness, our time is gone, and I hope that we will hear from our parents. If they want more information like this about child development and about pediatrics and the things we've been talking about, let us know, and we will do it. We want to tailor-make this program and the content of it for the needs of the people who are listening. And so let us know. Give us a call. Email. Text.
Facebook. Don't text you. You won't text back.
I won't text back. Once again, Dr. Meeker, thanks for coming.
Oh, yeah.
Come on back.
Oh, yeah, I'd love to. Mm-hmm. Thanks for having me.
Good.
Okay.
Well, this has been a very practical edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk with our guest, Dr. Meg Meeker. It's what we call the tools to put in your parenting toolbox. And to our listeners, you may not be able to text my dad, but you can always email us through our website, drjamesdobson.org, or message us directly on our Facebook page. Or if you'd prefer, you can call us 877-732-6825. And while you're there, ask how to become a monthly supporter of Family Talk. Any contribution you send will be used to help strengthen marriages and help moms and dads in their parenting duties. And we appreciate all donations, whatever their size. Now, if you'd like to get copies of Dr. Meeker's books, like The 10 Habits of Happy Mothers, or Strong Fathers, Strong Daughters, or any of my dad's classic parenting books, you can find out how at drjamesdobson.org. And with that, I say thanks for joining us today. I trust it's been helpful. God bless, and please make plans to join us again next time for another edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
Family Talk is not affiliated with Focus on the Family.